Time with your host here, Doyle Shamley, out of Eager, Arizona. Now, if you'd like to contact the Hour of the Time, you may do so by writing Hour of the Time, P.O. Box 940, Eager, spelled E-A-G-A-R, Arizona, 85925. That's Hour of the Time, P.O. Box 940, Eager, Arizona, 85925. Our website, hourofthetime.com, that's hourofthetime.com. And if you'd like to contact me directly, just share research, comments, questions, complaints, what have you, you may do so by calling 928-333-2942 or my personal email, hourofthetime@hotmail.com. Now this evening we have a very special show due to the date and the projects completed, and I think most of you can figure out the reasoning behind the date. This is the 5th anniversary of the unfortunate night when Bill was murdered by our government. And so we're having this show, and also to bring out some of the background information and some of the future plans. So for this special event and this special broadcast, I have on with me Rob from Canada, and I'm sure he's connected. You there?
Good evening, Doyle. I'm here indeed. Yep.
All righty. And Rob, why don't you let the audience know kind of what we're doing and where we're going and who else is on with us tonight.
Well, it's been quite an exciting year, and the last several weeks especially, because we're wrapping up one of the major projects that we've been promising for a little time now. We were hoping to get it out in the spring, and then we had the initial viewing of it at the HOT conference in August, and we should have James Jankowicz from Ether Film Works on the line. Are you there, James?
I am.
And what are we...
Yeah, guys.
What have we got you linked up for tonight, James? You want to make the big announcement?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. The long-awaited announcement basically is that this film is finally done. And it's been a long time coming. It's been 3 years in the works since I initially reached out to Doyle and contacted him, and then subsequently contacted you, Robert. And then it's been a heck of a journey. You know, it really has been. And you guys have been very supportive throughout the whole thing. And it took a lot of traveling, and it took a lot of time. It took going through hundreds and hundreds of hours of both videotape and audio tape of Cooper's broadcasts, and there was a lot of whittling down, because there's an incredible story here, obviously.
And what is the specific work you're talking about?
Okay.
We haven't mentioned it yet.
The specific work I'm talking about is the release of the film, The Hour of Our Time, The Legacy of William Cooper. And I know this had been... we've been running promos on it sometime on your site and running promos on YouTube, and I know a lot of people have been contacting you guys saying, when's this thing going to be done? And it is finally done. It is in the can. It is going through its first round of duplications right now as we speak, and it will be ready for shipping very shortly. I think, Rob, you have more of the finite details.
Yeah, the actual specific ship date on it will be... by looking at the calendar here, November 15th. We should actually have it in early next week, but by the time we get everything organized and everything, it will be November 15th when these will be actually going in the mail. So as of tonight, Monday night here, we will be accepting orders for The Hour of Our Time. And I guess we've discussed the pricing structure and everything for that, Doyle. Did you want to just go over that briefly?
Yeah, certainly. Thank you. The pricing structure, you know, we had some concerns, ladies and gentlemen, about in one case you don't want to degrade James's work or the quality of the product, and we're going to get into the quality of it. It's amazing, with some giveaway price. On the other hand, we don't want it out of the reach of our majority of our listeners. And so what we've done is, and also the Hot Club, our agreement with them, as usual, always getting a better price and a special offer. So we're looking at always postage paid, keep in mind with Hour of the Time, these prices, but $30 for this DVD release. And you know, this is an introductory special through the end of the year, so keep that in mind if you want to save a little more. So $30 postage paid for non-Hot Club members. Now, Hot Club, like always, gets a reduction, and that's $20 postage paid for the Hot Club members. And if you're curious about what the Hot Club is, or how to join it, or the benefits of it, because there's several benefits. For instance, 20 shows or so on gratis every month to you, broadcast. And besides the reduced pricing, just simply go to the website, hourthetime.com, and you can check out, just go to the Hot Shop, and there's a full explanation of the Hot Club and the details, the savings, the benefits, and how to join. And I think that'll be in our keeping of our standards. It'll help distribution. Won't price it out of reach of most people, but it won't degrade the work and efforts that he's put into it, because we are listener-supported. And we've got a lot riding on this documentary, which we're going to also get into, you know, later in the show. And if anybody has queries about multiple orders, and you know, I don't mean two. Don't waste yours or my time writing me because you're going to buy two copies, but within reason, multiple orders. If you're buying five for some friends at work, email us. Email me at hourthetime@hotmail.com or give us a call, 928-333-2942, and we're happy to make some sort of quantity pricing there. And because it's just no different than Behold a Pale Horse, the book itself, or the audio books in Behold a Pale Horse or Oklahoma City Day One, the publication, because many of you do have outlets and are good, legitimate outlets that need to have a copy of this DVD like the other works, libraries, schools, churches. So we don't want you burdened with the whole effort of spreading the word, so we're willing to work with you on some quantity pricing. And I think that's pretty much explains why and how we picked what we did. And James has been gracious enough to let the bulk of the funds after, you know, ship, because they are, all the prices are postage paid final price. So once the professional duplication, which we're having done by a normal studio, is out of the purchase price and the postage to us from that studio, and then our distribution postage from here back out to you and the audience is taken out of it. James has been gracious enough to leave Hour of the Time a good two-thirds chunk of the proceeds, since we are listener-supported, and you all can help with that, because we really have a lot riding on this, and James will be explaining more of that later. But I guess that's all I have on that issue, the pricing, and why, Rob?
The one thing I'd like to mention is that this is one of the, as opposed to the book or Behold a Pale Horse I'm referring to, or even Oklahoma City. This is something that we are producing ourselves at Hour of the Time. Now, it is a professional duplication house that is making the copies of the DVD for us, but all of the rights and everything for this stay right within the Hour of the Time. So we're going to have a bit more control over this project. As some of you are aware, the book Behold a Pale Horse, we haven't been receiving royalties from that because it went out to another publication house that was contracted to, kind of a deal, and when Bill died, that deal sort of fell through too. So we're able to keep this all in-house, and that's thanks to James and all the work he's done and some of the work I've done trying to find a duplication house, which we now have. By the way, the DVD will be coming out, well, like we say, today for shipment on the 15th. In a beautiful, it's a professionally packaged, normal-sized DVD case. It's got a four-color wrap, so if you people aren't familiar with printing terms, that means like a nice color wrapper on it. You'll see the wrapper on the website if you wanted to go to hourofthetime.com and check that out. The disc itself is also four-color printed. So it's a really a beautiful piece. It's going to be something that you'll be glad to have in your house. And it's very nicely professionally produced. And the content of it, of course, is the main thing. And I guess we can start with that. What did you want to ask James about the actual content, Doyle?
Well, I think maybe the James, if you could cover for the audience the more general content, you know, length and some of the general ideas of what's contained in it. You know, is it chaptered? Is it indexed? All those things, just
yeah.
So they have an idea of how professional this thing is done.
I'd be happy to. It is a it falls under the qualification of a feature length. It runs 1 hour 23 minutes. Yes, it does. It is a official DVD with its own chapter assignments. And each chapter is pretty much divvied up in terms of the story, of course, you know, and it's named pretty appropriately. So even if you look at the chapter names, you could pretty much figure where in the timeline that's taking place. So, and
this is an all-encompassing work about Bill's life, though, right? It's not just about the night of the murder or
yes.
or anything like that. It
right.
basically catalogs Bill's life from A to Z.
Right, and let me backtrack into that a little bit then.
Certainly.
Because It pretty much picks up from the point where Bill, in his own words, explains the incident that he had experienced while he was in naval intelligence with his first sighting of what he called the UFO at the time, and how it rocked his world. You know, it basically changed his perception right there and then having that one experience. And so the film pretty much starts from that point. It goes into a little bit about his history in terms of his military experience. It then goes into what prompted him to go forward and start writing this book. It covers how he'd been threatened in terms of his, when he had his life threatened and had lost his leg during one of those incidences. And then the film proceeds into the defining works that he created that pretty much put him on the map. So that would include, but not limited to, the publishing of Behold a Pale Horse, and which I believe came out in 91, and then his Mystery Babylon series, his identifying of Area 51, and then his bringing people up to that area, and which I personally recall him always announcing those trips, and just filled with regret for never having made one of those trips. You know, I've always wanted to. It was always on my agenda. It was always on my agenda, too, to actually meet him one day and want to interview him. But time marches on, and unfortunately, this incident happened, and that's where we stand right now. So unfortunately, I never got a chance to meet him personally. So the film pretty much goes through all of that up until when he started getting harassed by the FBI, and when they started going out to Arizona, the agents that they put up there to keep an eye on him. A lot of the story is told in Bill's own words. From his early days, then the story starts taking its own momentum from Doyle, explaining specifically into the terms of the murder and how that whole situation went down and the FBI harassment. And then Robert's contributions were invaluable in terms of filling in the gaps that pretty much fell in between those timelines, those particular scenarios. So we're talking about a film that covers from his naval experience right up to the point of his death, right up to what the Hour of the Time is doing right now. What are its goals presently? What are its goals in the future? It's pretty much in Doyle and Robert's hands now, so they pretty much explain where we want to take this at this point. And that's pretty much the structure of the whole film and what brings us up to it.
Well, I think that answers the bulk of the background to the film in a thorough job. And Rob, I think you had something for James there next.
One thing I'd like to add, while that's a beautiful clinical description of the film, it does not, I mean, I've seen the final product, obviously. The film is very, very heartwarming, very moving. it is quite a powerful piece of work. And I guess, you know, it's often hard to toot your own horn or something, James, but yeah, you really should be, there should be accolades for you for this project. It was very, very, very well done. And the last time, the final version that I've seen here is I had a hard time watching it because it choked me up. It was really, really well done. And like I say, heartwarming, and I will watch it again and again, but I think I will still get choked up over and over. So.
Well, I appreciate that, and I will take the advantage to blow my own horn for one moment in terms of that, too.
Certainly.
So, because, basically, yeah, I didn't go into that whole thing, but obviously Bill's life was one of great controversy. And even though that's a strong point of the story and primarily put him on the map, it's not something that I necessarily wanted to exploit. And even when I was speaking with Doyle about this in the very early stages, I think back as far as 2003, and we started having our first telephone conversations about it, I was pretty clear about that, and I think Doyle felt at ease about that too. The last thing we wanted to do is make this terribly exploitive film. There's a lot of information about Bill on the website. There's a lot of people saying a lot of great things about him. There's a lot of people saying a lot of bad things about him. You know, very few of us know what the actual truth is. But this guy was a, you know, was an incredible person to sacrifice so much financially, to sacrifice the attempts that have been made on his life, to sacrifice his relationship with his family, all for this underlying principle that he believed in, which was primarily freedom. At the end of the day, it could be summed up in that word easily, freedom. So what I really wanted to bring that part of him into light. I really wanted to put forth that humanitarian part of him that a lot of people hadn't been necessarily exposed to. Perhaps some people had bad experiences with him on the phone. Perhaps they heard about people who had bad experiences with him on the phone or met him in person. And we're all human, and we all have our bad days and our bad times. And I think there was enough published out there in that respect. So it was really a concern of mine to make sure that he was painted in a that more humanitarian part of him was painted in the light.
I think it's a well-balanced work, too. It doesn't paint him as an angel. It doesn't paint him as a demon. I think it's just a very well-balanced work, even like you're saying, and maybe it sounds like it's we tried to put a positive spin on it. I really don't think that happened. Well, I think that it's more of a realistic work.
Yeah, and I wouldn't even go so far as to say a positive spin. A part of what I do in terms of my film work is I do a lot of family biographies. So essentially what I did was I brought that whole component into it as well.
The memory, yes. Okay.
The memory, you know, the remembering of the person. And the work, I don't want to say it's understated or it's a subplot, because that's very much a prominent part of the film, but it is highlighted by, again, focusing on him as a human being and what he experienced. And again, a lot of it is done in his own words, so there's really not a whole lot that I had to do. I mean, Bill was a very well-spoken, verbose person, so it was very easy just to find these clips of him pretty much speaking it in his own words very eloquently.
Now, I guess that brings us to the next question, is why were you even interested in doing this project? Had you listened to Bill in the past? Were you a newcomer? What got your interest piqued in Bill? And then I guess by extension we can go to the second part of that question, is why did you make the project? Why did you make this happen? Why is the movie being done?
I stumbled into Bill probably in the early 1990s, and I listened to a lot of shortwave. I am a student of a lot of this stuff. There are very few spiritual, religious, political movements, both in mainstream culture and subculture, that I haven't been exposed to at this point in my life. And as I was skimming through shortwave, I had stumbled upon Bill. And unlike a lot of what I was hearing at that time, Bill just had an extraordinarily captivating way of speaking. And that is very much addressed in the film as well. And so I was linked. I was hooked. And I listened to him, and when I listened to him as frequently as I could, you know, of course, a lot of it was contingent on the propagation of the radio on any given night. I had a couple buddies of mine who listened to him all the time, so if I wasn't picking him up well, somebody else was. And what really linked us, or hooked us, hook, line, and sinker, was the fact that he just happened to be so spot on with his predictions and his anticipations of things that were going to happen. And more than anything else, that's what lended us, or convinced me, of his credibility, because it was a time after time after time, you know, he would say something would happen. Yeah, it may have not happened on that day. It may not have happened until a year later. But every time something would happen, politically or on some kind of global level, I just be sitting there, it's like, God, you know, damn, Cooper is right again. And this was an experience I just experienced all pretty much throughout the 90s. You know, even though I continued listening to a lot of other people, a lot of other radio programs, it always came back to, you know, there's Bill again.
And yeah, he had a very good sense of distilling down all of the hogwash to something that could be relied upon, you know?
Absolutely.
Yep.
Absolutely. And right down to little examples like the bomb at the Olympics in Atlanta, Georgia. He just seemed so hell-bent that was going to happen. And, you know, of course, everybody else is like, well, that's a 50-50 chance, whatever. But that is just an example of everything he said that he was adamant that was going to happen had, you know, eventually happened. Now, I had been there. I work only two blocks away from the World Trade Center. I was there on the events of 9/11. I was there, you know, all during the cleanup, of course. And that was an absolutely horrifying and horrific time. But when I saw, I had made my way back to Jersey, and when I saw Tower 2 go down, it was all Cooper that was like flooding into my head at that moment. And all I kept thinking to myself is, this is what, you know, he said was going to happen, and this is the way it's more or less going down. And I was just absolutely amazed. And now the one incident that I think really pushed me over the edge and really made me take a step forward and actually contact you guys and want to make this film had been when they had the one-year anniversary of 9/11, and they had shown those lights into the air at the six-month part. I don't know if you guys remember that.
The big blue beams, like,
yeah,
out of the Luxor,
yeah,
pyramid or whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Those things were supposed to burn for a month. They had burned over a month, and I thought that was kind of curious, and found out they had burned for exactly 33 days. And then we're at the one-year anniversary, and again, this is Battery Park, right down the block from where I work. And while they're lighting the eternal flame, and they have this whole celebration or this whole memorial to it, what song are they playing but the music to 2001: A Space Odyssey?
Mm-hmm.
Now, this all could be purely coincidental, but I had just gotten to the point where I'd had enough coincidences like this happening in my life, where I said, you know, well, good, bad, or indifferent, this is just a hell of a topic. This guy has changed my life in terms of how I perceive certain things. And, you know, I want to do this. And that was really the one defining moment that sort of pushed me over the line to want to go out and actually create this now. And for those of your listeners now who don't understand that significance, who might be tuning in and might not be that familiar with Bill's work, it's very hard to get into right now because Bill was a student of the occult, and he really understood it on a very profound level, and he understood how that occult knowledge spilled into politics, how it spilled into religion, how it spilled into global events on a daily basis. So I can't, for those of you who are not familiar, who are saying, well, why does it matter that they played that particular song while they were lighting the flame, or why does it matter that those lights burned for 33 days? To you, it might not have any relevance, but to those who studied that component of what Cooper had to say, it's very relevant.
Well, there's 1,400 or 2,000 episodes that we'd be happy to to sell them if they're interested in doing all the homework for that. But so what?
1,926.
There we go.
Right.
Yeah.
So if I can just finish this one point.
Certainly.
So what prompted me at that point then was I just realized that it wasn't long after that Bill was killed. And as much as the events of 9/11 were overwhelming, to log on to the website that one day and see that sign up there that said he had been killed had just been another blow to the back, to the solar plexus. You know, it was just another thing to sort of knock the wind out of you because you're just like, well, you know, as somebody said on one of the websites one time, it's like, what are they starting in alphabetical order to get rid of all the, now that they passed the Patriot Act, they're starting in alphabetical order to get rid of all the dissidents.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, that was a shock. And I just felt, when I was looking at my own library, and I saw his book up there, along, you know, with all the other books and tapes and videos that I have of all sorts of different topics and things, I just felt, hey, you know, this is something that I would want to see in my library. You know, I would want to see some sort of documentation on the life of Bill Cooper that's up to date. Obviously, when we go on the internet, we can't always trust the sources that we're getting on there. So, and then Doyle and Robert, of course, were just absolutely gracious in allowing me the opportunity to come out to Eager and then go up to Canada and to share the story. And so as I was going through the hundreds of hours of video and audio tape, I more or less was just able to string the story together over the last two or three years. It was a daunting task. You know, it was done while I'm working full-time, while I was doing my graduate work, so it had not been out as quickly as we wanted it to be, but I feel it is very thorough. and it took a long time, but I think the end product tells the story. Now, there's a lot of things in his life and his lineage and his timeline that weren't told, and within a 90-minute project, you have to be selective. So I had my reasons for leaving some things in, leaving some things out, some things I felt warranted much more explanation than the film had time to get into. I think we all agree that any one topic that Cooper focused on could be a 15-hour miniseries in and of itself.
Well, that's part of it. In our discussions, as you were piecing this together, we decided what kind of approach do we want to take, and Doyle and I basically agreed with yours, is that we wanted something that could be immediately understood by people that had never even perhaps met Bill before or even heard of the man's name. So the documentary introduces him and his life story and what he was all about quite well. Yet, even for those listeners that listen to him long time, you're going to get a lot of answers out of this documentary that, we only came across since getting the police report last year. And a lot of the rumors and everything are quelched in this, sort of just this final work. I don't know how to describe it, but it sort of just grabs everything and puts it all together. And now Bill can rest in peace because an homage has been made for him here with this documentary, and it's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we should just switch and continue. Doyle, how did you first have contact with James? Do you remember how this all started?
It was an email, and then being open and not too worried about somebody hurting me, whether that's wise or not, I don't know. I just said, let's talk. And, I didn't know him from Adam. Of course, he didn't know me either. And some people who visited, Rob, you can relate to this, have thought they were going to end up dead in the woods. And him.
Yes, indeed, yeah.
Yeah. And James came with a wonderful gentleman along with him to help him out, named Carl, who I feel deserves a lot of credit for that initial filming, because they both, either one of them could have broke it, and it wouldn't have been, I wouldn't have felt put aside at all just to tell either one of them to go to hell and walk away, but both of them were professional. I was comfortable with them. I felt safe in what I was doing, and we had, been harassed quite a bit here, people poking around town claiming to be publishers and magazine authors wanting to get the story. They weren't. Some actual federal agents trying to see how much I knew of the background information would portray being authors and stuff, and I didn't have that with them, and I felt comfortable. And they came out, and we spent three days, and that was just their initial exposure to the massive volume of stuff we had in storage units and at the studio and the research center, open to the public. And they went through just the initial spattering of it and took home a whole bunch of footage where they let me speak freely, I felt. It's obviously not all in the film. That's impossible because they recorded like 10, 12 hours, it seems like. But a good distillation of what they got from me is in there. And the rest is there for posterity's sake, if something were to come up. At least it's told and it's documented. And at that point, obviously, Rob was already webmaster and co-host, etc., and you were kept abreast of those details. And then there was a hiatus where they had to...
We missed each other, James and I, in Eager, by about a month.
Yeah, exactly.
Sadly.
And
we just didn't cross paths.
That
just after the first time Doyle and I had met, basically.
Yeah.
That, at least face-to-face, the first time we had met face-to-face was several weeks before James got there. It's too bad, in hindsight, that I didn't know that, and we would have scheduled the trips all together.
Yeah.
But anyways, go ahead, Doyle, sorry.
No, that's all right. And then, there was, of course, a gap there, because I think, and if I'm wrong, correct me, but the impression I got was once James had this initial footage, and he had already sworn that he was going to document everything I said, even, which is good, and get other sources, etc., and saw the massive amount of material we had here, I think he might have been taken back a little bit, because I know there was quite a large period, but necessary period of, now where do I go? Now I got all this footage, and I know that I can get a bunch more, and I know I can get these and this and this. where do I go? Where do I sort it? And then at some point, you know, along the way there, we had a general outline, and that's where he went to work more hands-on with you, Rob. So I guess that's your part of the story. I wasn't there.
Well, between the time then, James, when you had visited Doyle initially, just give us a bit of an update till when you came up here to Canada. And basically, we have a coast-to-coast-to-coast link up here tonight, folks. Mm-hmm. Doyle down in Eager and me up here in Ottawa, Canada, and James over in Jersey. So
yeah,
we're across the continent.
It had been quite a while. I think it had been about between 6 and 8 months, all told, because as Doyle said, I mean, I was, you know, completely overwhelmed. It's like, you know, how do I tell this story? and now that I had, but what was nice about it, and like Doyle said too, is I started stringing it all together. And I'm glad I waited, because then by the time I went up to visit you in Canada, Rob, I knew specifically what I needed from you. You know, had I gone up sooner, you know, I still might have been all over the place. But I had strung enough footage, enough of these ideas together in a timeline where when I went up there, I knew exactly what to ask you. I knew what I needed from you to fill in terms of completing the story. And, yeah, so I spent three days up there with you two.
Yep. And it seemed like there was a dozen hours of footage with me in the hot seat too, Doyle, so don't feel so bad. And I was in a rocking chair. You'll see this orange rocking chair that I have this nervous habit of when I'm in a rocking chair, I like to rock. And, of course, that doesn't translate well on video. So every 2 or 3 seconds, I'd look over to James and his hand would be going down like, stop rocking, stop rocking, stop rocking. So it was a tortuous task sitting there for these interviews.
It took direction really well. It really did. I mean, there was really no having to adjust a whole lot or make a whole lot of adjustments. Doyle, your knowledge of this information and your ability to be so at ease in front of the camera and just talk like you're talking to a person almost made me want to just, you know, also release all the material that we shot of you, because it's literally like Doyle sitting there at your kitchen table and he's talking to you. You know, he's just very unaware of the camera, very unaware of the lights. I mean, you don't get subjects that are generally that comfortable. And I know you don't have any formal training in this, and it's not like you have this huge background in it, you know. So it was kudos to you for being able to, you know, pull it off that seamlessly and that easily. And then I think, Rob, you were a little bit nervous in the very beginning, but after we shot an hour or two, you just really settled into it.
Hey, I'm a radio guy, you know.
Yeah, you're
I'm okay on the radio, but... Yeah, so that was in was it just last January now?
I think so.
Yeah, I think it was just last year. So
it was
then
winter. Yeah, last
you
year.
Had about 8 months then to go before the initial release of the documentary at the HOT conference this summer. So
right.
That's when we showed the initial release of the film, the rough cut number one or whatever it was called.
Right.
And got a little bit of feedback from those that were in attendance. Now, it was, I think, nice probably having a friendly audience to begin with. And everybody was, of course, all just handing you bouquets the whole time until you said, no, give me some real critique on it because I want to fix this up to be a perfect product. And between the release that I saw in August, which was wonderful in and of itself, and this final release, it is a nicer work now for sure. I don't want to say a much nicer work because the original one was wonderful too, but this last version I really, really enjoyed.
And the feedback from the people at the conference was just absolutely invaluable. You know, these are fans. These are primarily a representative of the target audience. So to hear their feedback was, yeah, I took a lot of it to heart, probably a good 85, 90% of it. You know, I did actually make those changes on. And that was just, you know, that was a smart thing to do. I'm glad the conference came up at the time that it did and everything worked out the way it did, because without having that feedback at the conference, it would have been a different film. So, and the people there were just great, and I had a ball out there too. I really did. So anyway, that's the hows and the whys. And again, you guys were great, and I appreciate all your support. And on some level, I do apologize that it took so long. But on the other hand, you know, I think we can all look at this and say, wow, this is something really, really good. You know, something we can really be proud to put out there, and something that truly tells a story from A to Z from the people who knew him the best. And we were talking before we went on the air, and Doyle had mentioned this before, too. There's a whole lot of junk out there, you know, in terms of people misquoting and misinterpreting how the murder had occurred. And, Doyle, maybe you can even expand on that a little bit.
Yeah, I think that a good thing out of this whole project is the fact that it's the definitive work to be, you know, used alongside, let's say, our two-hour broadcast. Audio-wise of the murder and the details, but there's so much misconceptions where people who claim to be big patriot Americans or big researchers are still mimicking what was told on some chat room 5 years ago. And a lot of the so-called research that's been done into the case is easily proved to be outright lies.
In books, too, like not just rumors on the internet. These are some of these are published books that have complete false story.
Yeah, and you know, what's really sad is because we've had the police reports offer at just strictly duplication cost only available, and because I got to see the acquisition logs for the reports, I can truly say that 90% of the reports have only been obtained by James and myself only. So these that have said they've read it and researched are outright blatantly lying. Because I got to see through the law enforcement all acquisitions of the reports. They were all me. James's acquisition occurred because I took him down there because he needed the stuff and wanted to verify. So I saw him obviously do it. And then lo and behold, when I look at the entire record, we were it. And some of them, of course, were just me, and then copies made for James. And so this will set the record straight. This is the official thing, ladies and gentlemen. That's what needs to be understood. If someone, upon release of this, you hear these braggarts and idiots that have talk shows saying, well, no, I heard it happen like this, or I don't think it happened like that, you can feel safe in referring to the film and correcting them, calling them a liar, what have you, because this is correct, official, true, and I hope that people see fit that it gets a wide distribution legitimately. And I say that because James and all of us have a lot riding on this. We are listener-supported. James has put everything he could into this film, not just spiritually and labor-wise, but monetarily, and people need to realize that. Please don't just have it all over the internet. You need to realize that this isn't a socialist country, so you don't have the right to say, "Well, I need the information, get out there." So I'm going to pirate it and put it all over eBay and everywhere else free. You're only degrading all the work that James and Rob and I have put into it, and you're only degrading our operation, and you're really insulting Bill's spirit and memory upon doing something like that. And I think you know, that's where Bill, Rob and I have already arranged for a very, very harsh ramifications for any piracy through our operations attorney, who's been with us for years, and some people that are going to be watching all venues imaginable for any pirating, because don't insult James or Bill's work by pirating it and just giving it out all over. That's not going to accomplish anything. And
I mean, initially we will be the exclusive distributor for this probably through till the beginning of next year sometime, and then we're hoping to have an ISBN number for it and get it out through other channels as well, bookstores, video stores, all that kind of thing too. So eventually you will be able to get this, hopefully down at your local Blockbuster Video or something like that. So there will be initially this initial release, like I say, directly from the Hour of the Time, and we will later be supplying these other houses with copies of it.
And I'm in the process right now of trying to see that through, and that's not an overnight process necessarily, so I'd say, you know, into the new year is just about right, and then you'll be able to get it on Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, and your local video stores as well.
Yeah, and you know, and I really am, you know, hell-bent on that, what I've said about don't insult James's and Bill's work. The mass pirating, all you're doing is Bill's work still has a lot to do in this world as far as education, and our work of disseminating it and updating the research, we have a lot of work to do. James still has a lot of work to do, as Ether Film works, not only with this, but future productions. So don't shortchange his ability to expand his operation by doing the freebie thing and mass producing him for friends and stuff. You're only shorting yourself because you're only limiting ours and James' ability to expand and spread more information, because we got some massive other works ready to go, be released in DVD and publication. That's not going to happen without legitimate, sincere support from the audience. So I would ask that people keep that in mind, and that there's legitimate reasoning to that. It's not as some mainly foreign commentators to our work will say that it's just, oh, we're just money hungry. It's definitely not the case, so we wouldn't be constantly padding this operation along.
You're not talking about Canadians, are you, Doyle?
Yeah, mainly, yeah. Well, Britain.
Sadly,
too.
It's true, but yeah. That's...
Rob has seen the emails.
I've seen the emails.
And the 90% of it comes from United Kingdom and Canada, the other 10% from the rest of the world. And ironically, of the foreign countries that I would expect to be doing that, but are some of the most ardent and legitimate orders and fulfillment, is Australia.
Hmm.
Those people, you can't find a speck of piracy going on over there. When people want it, they legitimately contact us and get it. And the ones that have wanted to produce it or show it in public venues, like in their hometowns and stuff, they've contacted me. Said, hey, can I show this to 25 people at church? I mean, that's very honorable, I think, of them to do such a thing, which we always give permission. We just ask you, let us know, is all.
Yeah, we would love, actually, for you to be holding screenings of this. We would like to know about what's going on, just so we can keep track of it. But if you're willing to hold a screening of this movie in your local town, and you know a small theater or whatever where it would be appropriate to do so, certainly contact us, and we'll arrange to do some publicity for you through the website and make some arrangements with you to get this done. So.
And it's going to occur here. I mean, a screening, like Rob is saying, right here in the place where the incident took place, and a lot of his work was broadcast from, right here in Eager. And in fact, the Apache County Sheriff's going to get a special invite from me if they want to come view it. So.
And I am in the process of arranging now a small showing in New York. I've had a couple small showings just from close family and friends to get some feedback, but I'm looking to have a bigger showing, a one-night showing, in the city. What you're going to find in the film, too, at one point there had been a radio station called WBAI here in New York. It's part of the Pacifica Radio Network. It had just been, you know, it's as left as you can get. You know, it's far out fringe kind of stuff. And even they had commentary, which I included in the film, about Bill's passing. So it is a testimony to Bill, and sometimes I know he does get sort of lumped into the right-wing militia movement, but as you'll see in the film, his mind, his thoughts, and his ideas are far more expansive than that, and they really cover the entire landscape of paradigms and ideologies out there. The more I got to familiar with this stuff, the more archival stuff I saw of Bill, the more it just, you know, deepened my respect for him, and just realized what an incredible person he really was.
How many hours of material do you think that you sifted through over these past 3 years?
Hundreds. When you include the audio and the video, and then what's really funny too is when I was out with you guys in August to show the film, Doyle's like, well, let me show you something. We went out in the back, and sure enough, there's like another 7 or 8 boxes of video and audio tape you had out there, man.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, no. And so I had to ship all that back. And, yeah, and then between myself and another friend, we just sort of, like, went through it all, took a lot of notes, said this works, this doesn't work. But even before I had left Eager, I had gone through a lot of it. And anything that was just really crappy audio and crappy video, I just discarded immediately. And I just pretty much took the stuff that had, you know, some semblance of stability and quality, because a lot of this footage, remember, is old. You know, a lot of the stuff that I've was able to archive and retrieve had, you know, is well over, you know, some of it's 20 years old now.
Yeah.
10, 15, 20 years old. So, but it's held up well because it was shot on, you know, decent formats like Super VHS and 3/4 inch. So those things, you know, we were really able to salvage and include into the film. Some of the photos are kind of old and not so clear, but that they're far and few between. You know, the majority of the stuff is really clean video, clean audio. Of course, anything I shot with Doyle and Robert is, you know, crystal clear and sharp. So you're talking about a really clean, you know, streamlined project that's extraordinarily informative as well.
Yeah, and I, you know, I like to comment that upon seeing, you know, I had seen a preview of the finished work before the conference, and then you screened it when you got here in Eager. We did a private screening at the Hour of the Time headquarters, if you will. And then in at the conference, and I was quite amazed with how it came out. You know, I will say that to your credit and Rob's credit and stuff, because I got to finally watch it rather than be working as in trying to critique it, you know?
Right, right.
So it was nice to actually just watch it and then also get the expressions and input from others in our two, you know, initial debut showings here at the conference.
Right.
That helped a lot, too. Because some of the stuff that was pointed out were very legitimate concerns that I didn't see as a problem until they stated why it was a problem, and then I was like, oh, well, yeah, I guess if you don't know every detail of it like I do,
right,
that wouldn't be clear, you know, so right. That helped a lot.
One thing that both Doyle and I had missed completely, which I'm surprised we did, but one of the attendees at the conference had picked out that the narrator in the initial version of the narration had said, Bill, his wife, and kids. And it just, you know, you hear the term kids so often that it just flew right over our heads. And one guy put up his hand and said, I wasn't aware Bill had goats. And we're like, what? What? Oh, yes. So we immediately had that changed to children in the final version of the narration.
Yeah.
But just even these small details that, you know, really wouldn't change the underlying film or, you know, the fundamentals of the film at all. But just to be accurate, it was nice to have those extra eyes and ears watching it to pick these things out. But did Bill have goats, though?
No, I had chickens.
He had chickens, okay. Yeah.
And, no, I think that was a very good. And I won't say that I was necessarily choked up by it, but taken back by it. You know what I mean? Now, a lot of people have asked me that, including at the conference, several people asked, like, well, I'm surprised you were so relaxed in your reaction to the airing of the documentary there. And or to my half humor at the cemetery site to build his monument, which all the attendees got to participate in. I think a lot of that just stems not because the film didn't impact me, because it did, but the fact that I've went over it again and again and again, and the flowers for birthdays and for the anniversaries and Veterans Day on his grave, so it's become something I'm more settled with. But I was definitely the exception. The room, as I sat back and off to the side and observed the room of attendees watching the film, and James himself and Rob and everybody else that was there, I definitely saw their reactions. And it will make you feel the story, not just understand it. I think that's credit to James's work in laying out the order of scenes and information. You feel it, you don't just learn it.
And my big relief was the fact that when we had that showing in Arizona, that, you know, people laughed where you wanted them to laugh, and you heard sniffles in the room where you would expect to hear sniffles.
Mm-hmm.
And as a filmmaker, that's just so crucial, because when they laugh at the wrong parts or get all choked up at the wrong parts, you're like, oops.
And I do have to admit that at one point I was getting to that state, but it never got done because right then the cook came along. you may remember, Rob, and I had to run outside with them for dinner. If it hadn't been for that break, I probably would have, been much more choked up because it was getting to me. Even having relayed this story about 7,000 times, it seems like, either for legal purposes or for informational purposes. So it's just credit to the content and the producer and editor of it.
And Joel, do you want to talk a little bit about that too? How it's been 5 years now, and now this story's done, and to a certain extent, how you are sort of like relying on this now to say, here it is. You know, I don't have to repeat this anymore. I've done it enough.
Yeah,
it's sort of like a closure in some respect.
I am. And, in fact, the interviews that I will be doing on various other networks that want to help us promote this, who've shown an interest in it, have been friends of Hour of the Time, and Rob and I, et cetera, I've already told them, don't ask me where he got started, what he wrote, da-da-da-da, again, because I've already done it multiple times for them. In fact, I will probably just stop the interview if that occurs, but I don't have any qualms about that either. This is the definitive work, and your work's going to stand and speak for the events and the story and for Hour of the Time. And anybody interviewing me or asking me is going to have to accept that. They watch it. This is the answer. And don't shortchange James or his work, because he has something I don't really want to discuss tonight, but he has a bunch more work to release concerning the story and Bill that we are privy to, and we know about that, but it's much too premature to be talking about really in detail. But so accept this as the fact. It's been verified and checked and double-checked. So accept it, and this is it. I'm glad it's the final time, because I'm not going to discuss it again. There's two girls who get that benefit, and that's Pooh and Allison, who will get the full thing again from me face to face when they turn 18 and take control of much of the Bill's personal properties, etc. At that age, because of the stipulations of the trust fund form, they of course can ask whatever they want, but I helped raise them, so that's kind of a different story.
Right. And I have to admit too, in terms of Doyle, it was really amazing as I went through all this footage. I became very empathetic, of course, for the weight of everything you had to carry through this. I mean, Bill was not just a coworker. Bill was a friend. He was somebody that you moved in with to do this research with. You guys, saw each other every day, worked together every day. And to have to go through this burden of having experienced this whole incident as it's laid out in the film about how he was killed and how the whole night went down and all this crap, it just made me, it just made me really appreciate, you still being here today. There aren't a lot of people who would, withstand all that. A lot of people, I'm sure, would just be more than happy to just pack it all up, say, game over, and just walk away from it, considering the magnitude of everything you had experienced, both while Bill was alive and certainly after his passing. So I do have to say, and I know I've never said this to you before, but I'm saying it now, it's just I have a very deep respect for you for having gone the distance with it thus far.
Well, thank you. I was hardened in combat thanks to your Zionist government, and so there's where it comes from.
Right. Well, so I guess there was a plus side to it.
Yeah, the only one. There you go.
Because really, if Doyle had made that choice to pack it all up, then this documentary would not have gotten done. This Bill's work would not have continued. If it wasn't for Doyle, stepping in and, fighting the feds over the jurisdiction of the material, trying to preserve the trust, and, everybody reaching out, asking for a handout, asking to say, this is mine, Bill promises to me, blah, blah, blah. If it wasn't for Doyle being so aggressive and very calmly being there and fighting it every step of the way, we could have lost a lot of this material. And this, what I consider would have been a national archive, would have been gone.
Now, I had good support, people just like Rob, that, backing me up and getting me through it, and others that are credited in the film that, I don't have permission right now to say their names and whatnot, but they are credited.
Even when this work came out, there were a few people that did sort of pop out of the woodwork that had been in, hiding or whatever in the past that, you know, even we can just talk about Wes maybe for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Wes Complis.
Mm-hmm.
Complex Simplicity is the name of his band, and he donated basically about 90 minutes worth of audio work. So he has done the soundtrack for the Hour of Our Time, and just the way it works with the way James is able to fluidly work all that those different musical themes into the work, I think is very, very well done, and the music itself is very well done. So
yeah, and if I could say something about that too, Wes's contribution was just absolutely enormous, because I had originally heard Behold the Messenger, which was something he created, and that, of course, is extremely inspirational. So having contacted him, he was more than willing to say, okay, well, here's a bunch of other stuff, sent me an entire CD, and the textures and the totality of the music he sent me, there wasn't a single emotion that wasn't covered. You know, there was something on every track, or there was, within the whole track, there was enough to extract. It wasn't all this way, or it wasn't all that way. You know, there were all sorts of musical textures there that were just, it was literally a filmmaker's wet dream, for lack of a better word, because it's like, oh my gosh, I got all this material to work with now, and, you know, and I have the right to do it, you know, and it was just, without, the music was never overbearing, but it understated and was just lying under there and just highlighted things, just, I believe, just so eloquently and so perfectly. And had it not been for having so much, so many options and so much variety, you know, that would have been a more complicated thing to pursue in terms of music. But I found everything I needed was literally on that CD. And Wes has a spot on MySpace where you can go and sample his music. And the music is just, it's incredible. You know, it does have a certain Floyd-type quality to it, but it's, and a certain transcendent quality to it that I feel is just magnificent to listen to. So, yeah, kudos to Wes. And he's mentioned in the credits, and his website's mentioned in the credits, so you know, I encourage people definitely to go check him out.
And I got something else I'd like to bring up, gentlemen, is...
Okay, Doyle, I'm just looking at the clock here, and we got about 3.5 minutes left, so just
good.
To give you an eye.
We need it, because, you know, when a person looks at the advertisement, let's say on our online catalog and shopping cart, or the front page of the website, or other websites that we're going to work with, or on the shelf in Barnes & Noble, they don't see the hour and 23 minutes first. They see the cover. And... I know I couldn't have done it. I don't think James or Rob could have done it.
Certainly not.
No. Nope.
Yeah, I know I couldn't. All that goes to Sam. And what is that, Skrilla Productions?
Yes.
Yeah. And he is credited as well. And on the cover, et cetera, and website. He's done actually all of our modern artwork. Modern in the sense of time frame for the Hour of the Time. And he really put everything into this, and took critiquing from every source, be it James, me, Rob, or the whole intelligence network that his cover was emailed to, and was able to fit in the critiquing and changes about 99% of it.
It's a piece of art that I would actually hang on my wall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I would have that enlarged to a poster-sized piece and hang it on the wall. Like it is beautiful.
And both Rob and I think we talked about this too. It's like our initial reaction to the first draft alone was emotional. It wasn't like, oh, that's, you know, clever.
It's pretty or something. No, it was emotional.
It
yes,
it was emotional. It just went right to the gut.
Mm-hmm. I think so, and he deserves a definite hats off.
Absolutely.
That.
Yep. It's quite amazing how. You know, you're the filmmaker, the soundtrack writer, and even the artist doing the cover had just sort of melded into this one beautiful work.
Mm-hmm.
It's wonderful.
Well, I'll let you guys, not that I'm leaving the line, but wrap it up. I've said what I feel I need to say, I mean, tonight.
Well, any last comments I have, again, just go out to you, Doyle, and Robert, Sam, Wes, and everybody who's contributed to this. And that goes to all my friends who have been very patient and sat down and watched all the stuff that I made them watch, even though they didn't necessarily want to. So, but I can't name all them. But a big thanks goes out to them, too, because they were instrumental in helping solidify these ideas. And I just hope everybody, I just hope this answers all the questions. I hope this is a good enough piece to wind up in everybody's library. That was my intention, that it would just be part of the overall research that everybody would want in as part of their library, as part of their continuing search for answers.
All right. Thank you, gentlemen. Good night. We're at the top of the hour. You've been listening to The Hour of the Time, www.hourofthetime.com.